Blog Talk Radio.
I understand why America is rooting against the Golden State Warriors in this NBA Finals series against the Toronto Raptors. I understand why the Warriors are public enemy number one right now. It makes sense to me. They have won the last two NBA Finals. Three of the last four, they've been there. This is their fifth straight trip. So I understand why people at least have Warriors fatigue. That just happens after a long run of success. People want to see the next team do it. They want to see somebody knock them off. You see that with the Patriots in the NFL right now. It's a common thing, and it makes sense with the Warriors. They especially became sort of this bad guy or pariah once they acquired Kevin Durant through free agency. And so I think people have wanted to see that fail to some degree and have either some level of frustration with the success, or they're just tired of it, as I just mentioned. It makes sense. I understand why America is rooting against the Golden State Warriors. You got the Raptors on the other side who are this, like, pull yourself up by the bootstraps kind of vibe going for them. You got Kawhi leading the way. An unlikely superstar in Kawhi Leonard. You've got Kyle Lowry, who also, as Draymond Green put it, got it out the mud. You've got Pascal Siakam, who I don't think was on the trajectory to be a basketball player his entire life, the way a lot of these guys were. But nonetheless, here he is. Fred VanVleet playing a key role on this team. You got a lot of underdogs. It's a real cool underdog story over there in Toronto and what they're doing. Easy to root for. Feel good story. Might be the last time you see it, the one and only time you see it, given Kawhi Leonard's contract and free agency situation. It makes sense that America would root against the Warriors and for the Toronto Raptors in this series. But, man, is this not fun? Is this not, like, exciting to everybody? Like, to watch how the Warriors are able to just take advantage of whatever matchup is there. Like, whatever the personnel is, they've got something to do with it. And they can execute in a way that no matter how good a defense that you're playing, if you make any mistakes, they're making you pay for it because they play basketball just so well and so smart. And for all the stars, all the names, all the star power on the team, you got unselfish guys, at least the way they play on the court, is the way it seems. I know we've had moments in the last couple of years where it seemed like some of the guys seemed a little bit more selfish at times, but for the most part, man, the way they moved the ball around, there was a graphic at one point during this game in game two. Warriors took game two to tie the series one game apiece. There was a graphic up about them having, like, scoring 22 points on 22 assists. And it's like, yeah, man, because of that ball movement. You look at how they're playing, and the ball just moves so much more fluidly, especially with Kevin Durant out of there. I mean, that's been the case. That's what we've seen from this team with Kevin Durant out. And we've gotten to see guys step up. And, man, I feel like this is a team that we're rooting against that we would otherwise root for, given what all they're overcoming just I mean, just to keep pushing. I mean, I think it's been really impressive. Like how many injuries can they take? And so you look at this game too, man, and we're concerned about Klay Thompson's stats. He's got hamstring injury. Andre Iguodala just came back with a bad hammy. He was able to stick around, hit the big three at the end of the game. They left him wide open, dared him to shoot that apparently, and he did that. Like, you got guys hobbled. Klay Thompson, is he gonna play? Is he gonna play in Game 3? And how is that gonna affect the team? I can tell you right now, actually, they're gonna be in trouble. Klay Thompson was excellent before he went out. Excellent, getting to the rim, cutting, hitting shots. He was doing all of those things. And then his defense, like, this is the guy, this is one of the guys that you put on Kawhi, if not the primary defender on Kawhi Leonard. Klay Thompson's out with a hamstring injury, and look, the way they talk about Klay Thompson is that, like, he's some type of Iron Man, that he would, like, have to actually be dead to not play in the game. This guy's always available. I'd be shocked if he didn't play, but if he's questionable or if he's hobbled, that's going to be a problem for them. Andre Iguodala, bad hammy. They said he was limping. I think it was the Rachel Nichols report that said he was limping, noticeably limping after the game. Not uncommon at this point in the season, especially if you're that age, Andre Iguodala, 137 years old. So, like, it doesn't surprise me that Andre Iguodala might be limping after a game, especially given that he already had a bad hammy. But these are concerns because they're running out of guys. They're running out of guys. Quinn Cook, Alphonso McKinney, they're playing big minutes. These are guys that they're going to have to end up relying on down the stretch because they're so thin, because they're so tired, because they're so injured. And they might have to rely on them even more if Klay Thompson is going to be out. We'll see. We will have to see about that. But, yeah, man, it's just been so exciting to watch this team for me. And you're hearing this from a Rockets fan. Like, I've got no investment in the Warriors. In fact, I would be part of the American populace that would have a noticeable interest in watching Golden State go down. Noticeable. Kawhi Leonard, also big time, another rival, local rival in the San Antonio Spurs, got Spurs fans all mad. Skip Bayless on Twitter calling them and on TV calling them number two. Won't even address them by name. Got the nerve to try to slander the man and talk about how he's not a big time player, but all the while acknowledging that he's a big time player because you're the one that's mad that he's not with your team. Like, the hypocrisy right there, man. You got to admit, oh, he's not even that good, but I'm this mad about him leaving my team that I won't even call him by his name. Yeah, that makes sense. But, yeah, I could root for Kawhi Leonard easily, given the situation. You got a chance to take out the Spurs and the Warriors all in 1 year, not to mention going through the East in what I thought was unlikely fashion, because as we have gone over before on this podcast, I did not believe in the Raptors. Didn't believe in them for a second. I will say, though, I'm not bailing on them. I'm not bailing on them just because they lost this game, especially given the injury situation with Golden State. So we do have to see how this plays out. One thing to pay attention to, and I say this as if you could watch the game and not pay attention to it. But DeMarcus Cousins is someone I feel like we either forgot about or have largely written off as like a role player. You got that sense when I was reading on Twitter after the game that DeMarcus Cousins was glad to know that he was able to do his post-game interview at the podium instead of some, like, ducked-off little area that they had for him, like in a hallway or something like that in the arena for game one. Apparently he was just too cramped. Dude is huge at 6'11", and he's all cramped with these smaller beings and equipment, and it just, you know, for DeMarcus Cousins, he is, in his mind, I know, not a role player. He's a star. So, like, after the game, he would be somebody who feels like he should be at the podium if there's a podium. And so I get that. But he is either, like, somebody that we have, like, we've either forgotten about him or we've, like, just written him off. Like, he's a role player. And he is a role player on this team. He is. I mean, you got Kevin Durant. When they're healthy, you got Kevin Durant, Steph Curry. We know who their players are. Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. Like, he is a role player on this team. But that's not what he, like, actually is, you know? Like, he's not actually a role player. This is a star. And I think you got to see that in some ways in game two. Like he didn't play like a star, but you could see that he had skills and ability that were above what his status appeared to be with the team. Like, he was doing, I thought, some special things for what is a role player, what is effectively a role player. I think he wanted to say he pulled a double-double. I don't have the stat sheet up in front of me. I want to say, yeah, like something like 11 and 10. The main thing was those assists, man, his eye, his passing ability. It's not something that's been on full display in the playoffs because he just hasn't played in the playoffs. So it's not something that we're used to seeing this time of year from him. And we got to see that. We got to see that. And I thought that that was an exciting development, was the return of not just Boogie Cousins as an idea, but as an actual thing. I mean, so much of the focus on the Warriors has been Kevin Durant. Is he coming back? Is he coming back for the finals? Did he play his last game with the Warriors? You know, are they better without him? I mean, but this DeMarcus Cousins thing, I think, is like really a curveball. It's the real curveball here, particularly right now in the series. Like, we've seen the Warriors without Kevin Durant. We've seen them with Kevin Durant. We know what that's about. We know what this program is. We're used to, I would say, we're used to the Warriors with or without Durant. But this was only like our, 32nd game watching DeMarcus Cousins play with the Warriors? I mean, do we have many more than 30 games of Boogie Cousins with the Warriors? And really, I guess you could say it's the third game, but he went out so early. What was it? This is very much a small sample size of Boogie Cousins, both with the Warriors and Boogie Cousins in the playoffs. And so this is still new. This is still fresh. I'm talking about this as if, like, he's going to win the finals MVP. I'm not going that far, but it is an interesting curveball that I don't think that we considered, at least I had not considered enough. And part of that might be because Boogie just can't stay healthy. That could be part of it. We're also seeing in this series how much defense matters. I think we always, to be quite honest with you, end up coming to realize that in the playoffs. Like, one of the popular things to say about the NBA is that they don't play defense. That's why I'm even bringing it up. But, I mean, we know that that's not true. But it can be true that defense is like the NBA players are choosy with defense. I think that's fair to say. They can be real choosy, real sometimey, right? So they might play defense when they feel like it. But they feel like it in the playoffs. And normally, good defensive teams are the ones who make it to the finals. And you have that especially with the Raptors and with the Warriors. On the Warriors side, and I'll just mention them because, you know, they're the ones that won most recently, but you see what they're doing against Kawhi Leonard. Excuse me, what they're doing against Kawhi Leonard mostly neutralized him. Look, he had like the quietest 30-point game that I've ever seen in a finals. And I guess that speaks to how good he is and how much of a focal point of the offense he is. But they've really been able to, between like the help defense and the double teams and just trying to get the ball out of his hands, they've done a really good job of making things really hard on Kawhi. I think the mix between Klay Thompson and Draymond has really been disruptive for him. And for all the talk of Pascal Siakam's success in game one, being able to shoot over the top of guys and take advantage of the Warriors not having a lot of size, I think they will live with the idea of Pascal Siakam having the game of his life and that being the thing that beats them. Like, if they can make this hard on Kawhi, which they have done in the first couple of games, then I think that's the strategy that they want to go with. I think that's what they want to do. I think they'll take whatever it is that they're able to throw out there against a Pascal Siakam-led Raptors team. And it was good enough for game one. But it's basically a 3 out of 5 now. And I think they're looking at this like, if we can neutralize Kawhi and make him just normal, not otherworldly, not the Kawhi that we've been seeing in this playoffs, but like maybe the one that we see in the regular season. Not the one that we saw in the playoffs before he got hurt, but just like normal star player type stuff. Then I think that works for them. But, again, I think that they've done a really good job on him. They should be commended for it. We don't talk about the Warriors' defense enough because they're so good on offense, because they're so flashy, because they shoot so many threes and they have so many stars. And it's easy to just look at, oh, well, you know, Draymond Green is the defensive guy. It is true to an extent that Steph is the weak link on defense. But Klay Thompson is an otherworldly defender. Like, he is an elite defender. So is Draymond Green. And they just do such a good job on team defense. And, of course, there's Andre Iguodala who can guard, when healthy, even as an old guy, can guard anybody. Just about. Really impressive stuff, man. And, of course, the Raptors are built around their defense and their speed and strength. Like, this is a very – I don't want to say it's a more athletic team than we give it credit for, because I think it's just what it is, that they just bust their ass so much. Like, this is just a team that really, really plays hard, and I think that's really what it is. Now, Kawhi is special. Like, he's got some special strength and agility and hand size and things like that going for him. But the Raptors are also a team that really get after it on defense. They really get after it on defense. Now, they had some lapses in game two. They cannot defend like they did in game two and expect this to be a competitive series the way we have all discussed it as being. And we've all accepted that this is going to be a really good series. The first two games have been compelling. You add in the drama of the possibility of Kevin Durant coming back and what that might do to the team, to the Warriors, and that's even more interesting. You add in the drama of not knowing whether Klay Thompson will be able to play or be 100% for the rest of the series with whatever it is that's going on with his hamstring. That is interesting. And then there's just the basketball itself, the fact that the Raptors are able to establish themselves in these games, whether Kawhi has it going or not. Like, they've been able to ride out the Siakam, Fred VanVleet, Marc Gasol, Kyle Lowry, supporting cast, do it by committee strategy here when Kawhi doesn't have it going or when they're doing things to, again, neutralize him or shut him down. Shut him down is a stretch because he's still getting to his spots and he's still getting buckets, but not as comfortable and not as often. Like, it is true that he has not been able to take over a game yet. 30 points be damned. He has not been able to assert himself in a way that shows that he is, in fact, the greatest player in the world, as we deemed him after running through what was, albeit, a strong Eastern Conference. We like this Kawhi story, so I'm interested to see what the criticism, if any, will be on him as they go on the road, as they take this thing on the road, man. Like, what is the narrative now going to be on Kawhi? We deemed him the best player in the world because LeBron James isn't in the playoffs. Kevin Durant is hurt. James Harden flamed out against the Warriors. And a lot of people's eyes, I don't actually believe that myself, but a lot of people, that's, I guess, the narrative. And Kawhi himself took down Giannis and Embiid, so he's got that to his advantage. So, like, you know, best player in the world, we've called him that. This has been a thing. And so the best player in the world is being challenged right now. Like, he is running up against a defensive scheme that I don't think he has fully figured out. And if he has figured it out, he hasn't been able to apply any of that. Like, it just has not worked out for him. It's been real impressive to watch the Raptors supporting cast and what they have around Kawhi still be able to make this interesting. And that is what I think the takeaway really is so far of the finals with these teams, is that the supporting cast and the depth of these teams, even if you don't, like, really want to view them, and the Raptors are deep, but you don't necessarily view the Warriors as deep, but they are star heavy, and the guys around them are complimentary. You look at this, and this is a series where the stars are banged up, and the supporting cast is full of guys who are not afraid of the moment and are just coming up there. It was Fred VanVleet and Siakam in the first game for the Warriors. I'm sorry, for the Raptors. And then in game two for the Warriors, you had Quinn Cook with a big second half and two big shots at the end of the game. You had DeMarcus Cousins, who is, again, not actually a role player or, you know, in, yeah, I guess as an idea, not a role player, but is actually a role player on this team, coming out and scoring, facilitating, rebounding, just being big, being a big dude. Remember, there was a lot of talk about them not having enough size after game one. I mean, that's been the story. Guys not named Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, and Steph Curry. You know, I say that. Steph had a stretch there, too, in game two, right? Didn't he? Where he starts off and he misses his first several shots, and then you look up and he's got like 14 points in like a minute and a half or something ridiculous like that. But to be clear, though, the games have not been about them. The games have not really been as much about the stars, unless you want to count Siakam as a rising star, which it would be fair. But that just hasn't been what it is. I think you can appreciate that, or should be able to appreciate that. And yes, again, while I understand why America is rooting against the Warriors, there are things about what they're doing that are worth admiring and appreciating. One day this Warriors team won't be around, and I'm pretty sure that I will miss them. I'm pretty sure. And we will talk about them and discuss them glowingly in the future. I'm positive about that. I want to real quick hit on Ava DuVernay's When They See Us. This is on Netflix right now. People are watching it. People are talking about it on Twitter. And it's a big deal, or a big series, because it deals with about the Central Park Five. It tells the story of the Central Park Five, which was a group of Black and Latino men who were falsely accused of raping a woman in Central Park back in 1989. This is a well-known story. I was surprised to find out a couple of folks that I worked with were not familiar with this story. I thought that this was a story that was well documented, if for no other reason, for folks now, relevant to folks now, because of the link to the President of the United States or his link to the case. But I just wanted to say that I am interested in this project. I know a lot of people have already started watching it or have watched it, and it's getting a lot of great reviews, and people are talking about how good it is and all this other kind of stuff. But honestly, man, I am curious or wondering if, like, some of us are, like, too woke for movies like this now, or for content like this now. Like, we've been exposed to so much of the brutality and so much of the indifference and so much of the racism that has pervaded our country for a long time, long before 1989 and long since it. And perhaps the more recent cases of the injustice of things that have us most jaded, but this is just one of those projects that has me like, man, I'm not trying to be bad. And all these stories really do, at the end of the day, when they put all of this stuff in life, it just really makes me mad. Don't want to be mad.